Hi, everybody. I think I should call this Esoteric Astrology Adventure number 34B, because again, after 20 minutes of work, the powers that be, the local server, was having difficulties again, and suddenly it all cut off. So that, I'm continuing, really, where I left off. And perhaps we'll stop this at about 40 minutes, because it was at about 20 minutes that we were stopped in the other one. It suddenly truncated right at page 78. We were talking about, now if it happens again, I'm just laying off the day because it's not meant to be. We were talking about non-sacred planets, how they are found ruling the centers in the spine, five centers up the spine, how they are related to the five non-sacred planets. But there is an astral focus of these planets for the undeveloped human being. I was speaking about how there are astral centers which reach a fourth dimensional stage at the second initiation, just as certain of the etheric centers become fourth dimensional at the first initiation. But obviously, in the case of human beings who are astrally polarized, some of these centers must be active, especially, I suppose, the lower ones among them. And then we were talking about the Earth and the Moon. Two of the non-sacred planets, the Earth itself and the Moon, are connected with two centers, which in the highly evolved man are not of dominating importance, although they may be of importance. The spleen, receiving the pranic emanations from the planet on which we live, and we talked about the spleen as well receiving emanations from the sun, and we wondered whether the sun's pranic emanations were mediated through the planet Earth. Indeed, in Cosmic Fire, it seems that they are. And the spleen is concerned with the etheric and physical bodies and with their physical relation. So we're talking about whether we're talking exactly about the splenic center or the spleen or the combination of both. It seems the combination of both, the relationship between the etheric and physical bodies and their physical relation. Then we talked about the Moon and its relationship to a center related to the thymus gland. This is definitely an etheric center because it's related to a gland, and the gland is the physical externalization of the center. Okay. And we say that this becomes inactive in the advanced man, but we wonder whether it becomes again active in the very advanced man, who in a way recaptures the innocence, the spontaneity, livingness of childhood. In any case, this center is connected with the vagus nerve before the awakening of the heart center. Then we discussed when the heart center really fully awakens. I would say at the fourth initiation you have the absolute full awakening of the heart center, but even at the first initiation there is an awakening of that center. So prior to that, I would say, this center of which we are speaking, related to the thymus gland and connected to the vagus nerve, may be active. But not in the case of the advanced intellectual man. More needs to be studied about that. Then suddenly there was the... Well, okay, I hope this is not happening again. We again are experiencing possible degraded audio. But hopefully that does not recur. Two of the other non-sacred planets, Mars and Pluto, function in connection with the sacral center, Mars. Indeed, we may say that the Mars is related to, or perhaps serves as, the sacral center of the solar logos. Mars as a sacral center of solar logos, and the solar plexus Pluto. And that may come as a bit of a surprise. It caused me to think that one of the rays of Pluto is the sixth ray, not only the first. It seems to give a quality of relentless fanaticism in connection with Pluto. So we also know that Mars is connected with the solar plexus of man, as the chart in Esoteric Astrology 517 has shown us. But Mars is connected with the sacral center, and that makes a lot of sense because it rules all aspects of human sexuality. And Pluto with the solar plexus. This latter planet becomes active in the life of the man who is becoming alive in the lower sense. As a matter of fact, we're told that Pluto will not have an individual effect until the human being is actually an aspirant or a disciple. Though we do see that it has certainly a circumstantial effect. It does not seem to have a psychological effect which can be profitably used in the life of the individual who is not yet, at least, an aspirant. But DK is telling us about Pluto's functioning in relation to the man who is, quote, becoming alive in the higher sense. His lower nature, which in many ways is symbolized by the solar plexus as a whole, solar plexus, lower nature, moon, Mars, his lower nature passes into the smoke and darkness of Pluto, who governs the lesser burning ground, in order that man may live in truth in the higher land of light. So into the darkness of Hades, in the classical sense, the lower nature passes, it goes out of sight, as it were. It no longer becomes an object of preoccupation for the consciousness. So Pluto, we find, is becoming psychologically active at this time, and what should we say? What should we call it? We'll say, whoops, that's not the one I want. We'll say obscures the lower nature. Let's look at it that way. PL, Pluto, obscures the lower nature at a time when man is becoming alive in the higher sense. This probably has to do also with the death of the desire nature. And Pluto, for that reason, could be seen as active at the second initiation, when the moon begins to fall in Scorpio and personal desires are fading away and the higher will is understood, perhaps for the first time, and will begins to conquer desire. So there is a falling into darkness, let's call it that, okay? A falling into darkness of the lower nature, and Pluto promotes this in its relation to the solar plexus. Interesting, isn't it? We have to collect all of these ideas, and actually I have collected compilations of everything said on particular planets in the book Esoteric Astrology. Maybe there's more that the Tibetan has said, but at least I've done that collection for Esoteric Astrology, and at some point it would be good to go over each planet separately. I think it would be very useful. Also a good refresher for me. Okay, and now we have another, we're talking about the non-sacred planets, aren't we? Okay, so the first thing we talked about was the relationship of the Earth and the Moon, and the spleen and the thymus center. Then we spoke of Mars and Pluto. Now we're going to speak of the Sun. And the Sun, says DK, stands here for Vulcan. We always have to know what the Sun stands for at a within a particular context, because it can stand for so many things. So there's all of this fluidity that we have to understand and be clear about. The Sun stands here for Vulcan, which is a sacred planet, and it governs a center in the front of the throat. Usually we're talking about centers that are up the spine, but and the influx into a center usually is considered in relation to the centers as they have a vortex on the spine side, and an efflux, a vortex of efflux at the front of the body, but this particular center is found at the front of the throat and is related to the parathyroid glands and not to the thyroid gland, which is related to the throat center. So the parathyroids are related to this smaller center, a smaller center to which the parathyroid are related. This center in the front of the throat falls into disuse as the creative period of throat activity begins. So as man becomes intelligent, perhaps as Saturn begins to take over the throat center, this particular center falls into disuse, just the way it appears that the thymus center, if we can call it that, falls into disuse in the advanced man. All of this will be really part and parcel of esoteric healing, and of course we will have to see these things. We are being told about them at the present time, but we will have to see with accurate etheric vision all of that which DK is here discussing, and then it will all come clear. It acts as a mediator between the higher and the lower creative organs, between the sacral and the throat center. So in a way, what do we have? We have, well, let's call it Mars for the moment. Mars in the sacral center to Vulcan in the parathyroid center to Saturn. Usually there's a Mars-Saturn relationship, but we can also say Moon and Uranus are connected with the sacral center as well. So there is a flow of energy as evolution proceeds between the sacral center and the throat center, and this parathyroid center is acting as a mediator in that flow. So let's call it the parathyroid center acting as a mediator. Okay. And it leads eventually to that creative activity which is consciously that of the functioning soul, when the throat center is being used by the soul. Throat center being used by the soul. Okay, well obviously this will have to be seen, and it is pre-creative. It is active during the pre-creative stage. And it falls into disuse when creativity begins. Okay, because Vulcan is not a planet much associated with articulation, with verbalization. It's rather interesting, though, if you consider Mars at the sacral and Vulcan as a planet of will, utilizing expressing the first ray, how will is meant to subdue desire, Mars. So we have Cain killing Abel in this respect, Vulcain killing Mars or Abel at the sacral center, the shepherd. And this is the subduing of the sacral activity and the willful direction of that stream of energy into the more fluid and active throat center. What else does he say here? Vulcan was one of the first creative workers among men, but he works, you know, he doesn't work verbally so much. He's perhaps a man of few words mythologically. He works with his hands, he works with his arms, he works with his body. Vulcan is creative with the body. So, is creative through the use of the body, especially hands and arms. He was also related to Cain, who killed his brother, Vulcain. And, well, that's pretty clear, you know. The first ray is the ray of death, ray one, ray of death. And this, the activity of Vulcan is bringing a kind of, quote-unquote, death to the sacral center. Or at least it is active in doing that. This is, I think, I'm really understanding this now, perhaps for the first time, how much Vulcan is active in doing this. Now, there's a lot of creativity that occurs as well at the second initiation when we have, what is it called, mental illumination and spiritual intelligence. This obviously requires the throat center. So at that point, spiritual will under Vulcan also comes in. So let's just call Vulcan a regulator of the throat center. No, not of the throat center, excuse me, of the sacral center for the sake of growing creativity. So it is killing out, in a way, the usual functioning of the sacral center and helping in the redirection towards the throat center. As I've sometimes said, if you have the Sun opposing Mars, you will get this kind of interplay, because Vulcan is so close to the Sun, it's like Vulcan opposing Mars. If the Sun squares Mars or the Sun opposes Mars, we have the same opportunity for will to subdue desire. This doesn't really happen so much at the first initiation, although it happens to a degree, because the instinctual and sexual responses are regulated at the first initiation, but the real regulation of will over desire is happening at the second initiation, and we must say that there both Vulcan and Mars must be active, even though we usually think of Neptune, Venus, and Jupiter as the most important planets at the second initiation. Really, if we are think very carefully, we will be able to find a way in which all planets participate in all initiations to greater or lesser extent, and which all and in which all signs of the zodiac can be used in all initiations to a greater or lesser extent. There are certain planets and certain signs of the zodiac which are prominent at particular initiations, but all of them can find a way to assist. And I think I've written something about this somewhere. I will bring this together so we can discuss it. I don't want to diversify the thinking too much. I want to stick to the main points which we can remember, but you know, we usually think, well, Neptune, Venus, Jupiter, they're all involved in the second degree, but Vulcan brings in the spiritual will, the divine will of the second degree, and Mars is the principle of desire which must be subdued, and Pluto is dragging up all kinds of emotional content, at the second degree, which has to be dealt with, and the moon, which represents, in this case, the emotional nature, falls in Scorpio, the major ruler of the second degree, so the moon is active as well. You know, those particular planets play quite a role there. Maybe Uranus, not so much. It's involved with the sacral center to a degree. And Mercury for spiritual intelligence and mental illumination, which has to be somewhat achieved at the second degree. So I think we can find a way for to understand how various planets can participate. And look, you know, suppose you're going through the second degree. Well, you don't just have a few planets in your horoscope, you have to have all of them. So all of the planets must somehow support that particular process, which is your focus and through which you are passing. And we have to find a way that each of the planets can be seen as supportive of the degree or preparation for the degree through which you are passing. Everything has to mobilize around that main objective. Some of the tasks which I propose to undertake in this section of our treatise on the seven rays are as follows, remembering that it is indeed a treatise on the seven rays. Consider why five of the seven rays express themselves through two sets of planets, sacred and non-sacred, which and also which centers these two groups of rays govern. And thus we shall relate, let us see, the seven centers in man's etheric body, the seven centers of the fourth creative hierarchy, of which the seven races are the expression. Isn't that interesting? That the root races are the seven centers or expression of the fourth creative hierarchy, or at least can be considered in that mode. Sometimes I think about the entity humanity, the human kingdom as a whole, that being which in a way is the human kingdom, and it would seem to me that the seven root races would be, of course, centers within the body of humanity. But they are not apparently simultaneous centers, they are sequential centers. We also need what we would call simultaneous centers, because all of the seven chakras in the human energy system are simultaneous, even though they are simultaneously present, even though they are activated somewhat sequentially. In other words, the full activation of the solar plexus certainly occurs well before the full activation of the head center or the heart center. So there is that factor of sequentiality. Okay. Why that five of the seven rays express themselves through two sets of planets, and two of the seven rays, the fifth and the seventh ray, do not express through two planets, at least if we are talking about the 12 planets we usually consider. Perhaps they express through other planets and through subsidiary rays of the frequently used planets, like, for instance, the seventh ray expresses itself through Jupiter, most definitely, even though it is not a ray that we normally work with. When we consider the influence of Jupiter, we pretty well confine our attention to the second ray. So we will relate the seven centers in man's etheric body, seven major centers, really there are many, and the seven centers of the fourth creative hierarchy, because from this perspective, each one of the root races corresponds with a particular center. Now here we have the fifth root race, and we might well ask, let's just see here, to what... What does the fifth root race correspond? to the throat center or to the Ajna center, perhaps? That is a question. The Ajna center has in it much of Ray 6 eventually, and so we will wonder whether during the sixth root race something of its nature may be awakened. But from another point of view, the heart center is very important there, because the Buddhic principle is the sixth principle, and the sixth root race will be a Buddhic intuitive, unitive race. We can handle this as we go. And then we will deal with the seven planetary centers. So the seven centers in man's etheric body, two of which are not usually active in most human beings, and the seven centers in the fourth creative hierarchy, and we still have two root races to run, a Buddhic root race and a willful magical root race influenced by the first and seventh rays, the final one, at least the final one in this round. And then we have the seven planetary centers in relation to which, again, given the evolution of our particular planetary logos through his planet, probably the base of the spine is not to be considered fully active. The sacral center could be considered as receding. And the head center may be rather latent, the highest head center. So maybe five out of the seven are active at this time. And then the seven and the five planets, which are the energy centers of energy in the solar system, responsive to the energy of the 12 zodiacal constellations. Well, in other words, what we're saying here, and I don't know if DK ever gives it a full description, is which chakras of the solar logos do the various planets represent? That's what we're talking about here. The seven and the five planets, which are the centers of energy in the solar system, responsive to the energy of the 12 zodiacal constellations. You know, rulership by a planet of a zodiacal constellation is a question of affinity. I've discussed this before. The lord of the planet and the lord of the zodiacal constellation are somehow related, although they are very different in their scope of unfoldment, just the way we can be related to a dog or a cat or even to a plant, perhaps. Or I might say, even to a stone. There are relationships between the kingdoms, higher and lower, and these may be preserved over time. Okay, so far we're pretty good. We have not had any of those mishaps. I hope I don't speak too soon. These planetary centers will be studied from two angles, from the orthodox angle, which is that of the undeveloped man and the average man, let's say that undeveloped man and average man, from the angle of discipleship and initiation, and thus from the angle of the disciple and the initiate. So different centers are active in the different types of human beings, and different triangles are formed to provide or to sustain the state of development through which they are passing. The seven and the five planets, which are the centers of energy in the solar system, responsive to the energy of the 12 zodiacal constellations, and how they do relate to the development of man. It's all an integrated whole, isn't it? I mean, we have to consider that we are receiving stimulation not simply from the human kingdom and from that which is found on the earth, but there are all of these subtle planetary energies and solar energies within our larger planetary and solar systemic environment. And the esotericist takes these into consideration and considers them very influential. And therefore, we are accused maybe of fanciful thought or unrealistic thought. But as we grow more sensitive, we do feel these subtle energies, and we can correlate the feeling with the time of the prominence of certain planets or zodiacal signs, and so we know that what we feel is related to what is being expressed by subtle energy sources. Our consciousness gets more and more subtle all the time. Okay, so what are we going to be doing? These are tasks. We're talking about tasks. And we're talking about the five and the seven and various kinds of energy centers within the man and within the fourth creative hierarchy and within the planet itself and within the solar system. That has been progressive, hasn't it? We've been discussing centers in a progressive sense. Etheric centers, centers in a creative hierarchy. He left out centers in a kingdom, but sometimes I think when he talks about the fourth creative hierarchy, oftentimes means the fourth kingdom. When we think about humanity, we think about the human creative hierarchy. Okay, they are hierarchies of monads. But when we think about humanity, we also think about the human kingdom, which is a member of this fourth creative hierarchy, an aspect of it. Then the seven planetary centers, sometimes the kingdoms can serve as expressions of planetary centers, and certainly continents can, and great cities can. So there are a number of ways of looking at planetary centers, probably a hierarchy of ways that we can consider planetary centers. And then the centers within the solar system, the centers of the solar logos. We've gone all the way from man's etheric body to the etheric body of the solar logos. And we'll study the planetary centers from the orthodox angle and from the angle of discipleship and initiation. And okay, here's another task. Task number two. So let's call it another task that we will be undertaking. We will be considering consider the energies of the three major constellations, Great Bear, Sirius, Pleiades, as they each pour through three of the zodiacal constellations. Interesting. Thus forming great interlocking triangles of force. Now, in a way, they can be considered to represent rays 1, 2, and 3. Ray 1 being associated with the cosmic Manu, as some have called it, or the Great Bear. Ray 2 associated with Sirius in its mode of the cosmic Christ. Ray 3 associated with the Pleiades, who are the bestowers of intelligence and in many ways the rulers of the Deva kingdom, which is a kingdom much associated with the third aspect of divinity. So we're going to consider the three major constellations as they each pour through three of the zodiacal signs. Now, from the point of view of rays, we can see this. The first ray, and hence the Great Bear probably, is related to Aries, Leo, and Capricorn. Sirius, from a certain perspective, relating the second ray, would be related to Gemini, which it certainly is. Virgo, possibly. Pisces, yes. Sirius and Pisces have a close connection. And then the Pleiades, distributing the third ray, related to Cancer, yes, there's a definite connection. To Libra, quite possibly, as the Pleiades are related to the solar angels, and also to Capricorn. We'll have to examine that. But then, let's see how he sets this up. Thus, nine of the zodiacal constellations are involved, and these, in their turn, fuse and blend their energies into three major streams of force upon the path of initiation. You know, when I look at this, I realize how easy it is to kind of read through this and think that one really understands it, and yet much escapes. So we've got each one of the great constellations pours through a particular zodiacal constellation. Now, we've been given that on page 50. In one way, the Great Bear does send its energy through Aries. Now, Aries is a must. And Libra. Is Leo also involved? Are those the three? Leaving Capricorn out of the picture. The Sirius sends its energy through Cancer and Capricorn. You know, just turn to page 50 in your book and you will see that. But it's also closely related to Pisces and, of course, to Gemini as well, and to Leo. There are a number of constellations to which Sirius is closely related. Then we have the Pleiades. It is sending its energy through Gemini and Sagittarius, but is closely related to Cancer, most definitely, but Cancer was already one of the constellations used. So figuring out which of the three zodiacal constellations are the recipients of the particular energy of the Great Bear Sirius or the Pleiades will require a little work. Let's take a look here at Esoteric Psychology, Astrology, page 50, and we will see the tabulation we have been studying. Esoteric Astrology, page 50. Okay, that's good. There it is. There's Sirius relating to Cancer and Capricorn, and certainly to Pisces and Gemini as well. We have the Great Bear relating to Aries and Libra. It has a connection, definitely, with Leo. They're even contiguous in the sky, and you use part of the Great Bear to find the constellation Leo. Just following the bottom of the Dipper down, you will always find the constellation Leo. With the Pleiades, we have Gemini and Sagittarius, but Pleiades are definitely related to Cancer as well. And to Taurus, of course. So anyway, it's not exactly straightforward which of the three constellations, zodiacal constellations, are the recipients specifically of the energies of the major or transcendent or superior three constellations. So nine of the zodiacal constellations are involved and three are left out. And then these in their turn fuse and blend their energies into three major streams of force. Presumably they would be sort of first ray, second ray, third ray streams of force. Let's see. These streams of force pour through Leo, Capricorn, and Pisces. This is a major setup, which is discussed later in the book. They are transmitted to Saturn, Mercury, and Uranus. Okay. And to the head, the Ajna, and heart centers. Well, the way this is set up is Leo corresponds to Saturn, Capricorn to Mercury, and Pisces to Uranus. The second ray, a stream of force, goes through Pisces from Sirius. This is interesting because it is as if, and you know, I'm just in a way realizing this for the first time, as if Leo, Capricorn, Capricorn, and Pisces are excluded from the nine, and the nine which fuse into three streams then pour through Leo, Capricorn, and Pisces. This is possible. This is theoretical. These are things that I seem to be noticing for the first time, so I'm rather grateful to have the opportunity to read through the book with you very, very carefully, if somewhat slowly, and try to turn my attention to things which I have overlooked before, and perhaps can bring into greater clarity at this time. Well, so far we have not been cut off by GoToWebinar. If we are, we'll at least have a 40-minute little program here. Okay. Thus, nine of the constellations are involved, and these in their turn fuse and blend their energies into three major streams of force, which have to be, they must be, first force, they have to be first, second, and third ray force upon the path of initiation, and these three streams of force pour through probably the three constellations which have not been included as subservient to Great Bear, Sirius, and Pleiades. Well, that complicates the issue, but let's just say that there are three main streams of force, and the Great Bear pours through three constellations, and these three focus together as a stream of force and pour through Leo, go to Saturn, go to the head center, and then to the throat center. That there are, the next one we should really consider is Pisces, because it's the second ray. They're not listed in order here. It should be Leo, Pisces, Capricorn, but what he's done is list them in the order of the appearance of the sign. Then there is Sirius, pouring through three zodiacal constellations, which in turn fuse their energies to become a single stream of force pouring through Pisces. From Pisces to Uranus, rather unusual that Uranus would be involved in a secondary stream, but thus it is, perhaps because it's associated with the rhythms of the heart, perhaps for that reason. And when you look at Uranus, its glyph, you know, I wish I had something to write with here. I'll write in the air, okay? This is kind of air sign person writing in the air. The glyph of Pisces is very similar to the glyph of Uranus, very similar. So there is being revealed a close relationship. Pisces-Uranus, the heart center, and the solar plexus center, and then presumably back to the heart center. I have to be careful here. It's the head and the base of the spine. You see, DK is somehow organizing these centers in terms of their sequentiality, how they occur. But this line from the Great Bear to three constellations, which fuse their energy and pass through Leo to Saturn, and thence to the head center, thence to the base of the spine center. Okay. And then we see as well that the Pisces stream started from Sirius through three zodiacal constellations, then through Pisces, then through Uranus, then through the heart and solar plexus. Now we have the Pleiades. And the Pleiades focus through three, thus far, unnamed zodiacal constellations, because we haven't really figured them out yet. We could stop and try to figure them out, but sometimes I think, you know, this book is so expansive that it's going to take hundreds of people to really crack the code, and everyone will work on a little bit different aspect of it, so none of us has to do it all. Anyway, we have the Pleiades, probably the seven of them, or nine of them, particularly, focusing through three zodiacal constellations. Could they be? What could they be? Well, we were certainly told that on page 50 that they are Gemini and Sagittarius and maybe Taurus. Anyway, going through Capricorn. And from Capricorn to Mercury, and from Mercury to the Ajna Center, and thence to the Throat Center. So that's the alignment. And I don't think I ever fully appreciated what an interesting interconnection of energies Master DK presented in this little paragraph. And normally we consider the three major constellations, but this is something, at least that I've never developed, pouring through three of the zodiacal constellations. Well, if we're going to accept things at face value, we can look to page 50 and say, okay, what have we got there? We've got Aries, we've got Libra for the Great Bear, and they pour through Leo, so we need one more constellation for the Great Bear. What could it be? Aquarius, perhaps Aquarius. Anyway, this is just a speculation, because there is something about the Great Bear and bearishness related to the constellation Aquarius. Sometimes the Aquarius people actually look bearish, just like Leo people look lionish, lion-like, that's better. So perhaps Aries, Libra, Aquarius. All of them, interestingly, having a close relation to Uranus, as does Leo. So that might work. See, I just get overly tenacious about these things and then try to solve them, even though I think, why try to solve them? Well, let's just say, for a Great Bear, through, let us say, this is very speculative, Aries, Libra, those are given, and Aquarius. And thence through Leo and so forth. Now, I'm using what the Tibetan gave us on page 50. So Sirius. Oh, why didn't I learn to type? Sirius, going through Cancer. He gives us this. Capricorn. Tell you what, I'm going to throw in Gemini here, and I'll say thence through Pisces. There is a close connection between Gemini and Pisces. We realize that Gemini is usually the mediating second-ray constellation, but when we have to find out what mediates between Gemini and its polar opposite, then Pisces is brought in. But I see I may have trouble using Gemini, so I have to use a question mark because the Pleiades passes through Gemini and Gemini and Sagittarius. So let's see. Pleiades, we are told, works through Gemini, Sagittarius. Well, it certainly works through Taurus and thence through Capricorn. So it looks like I've only got one sign left. I can't use Gemini over here, can I? I have to cross that out, although I want to remind myself that I attempted to use it. Aries, Taurus, Gemini, Cancer, Leo, Virgo. Although, I'll tell you, there's a very close relation of Virgo the Mother to Pleiades the Divine Mother as well. So, this is speculative. But at least it's an attempt to make some sense out of what Master DK has said here. And we will find this to be a very important chart as we move along. It should be remembered, he says, that the Now you've got that right. We're going from the head center to the base of the spine. We're going from the heart center to the solar plexus. We're going from the action center to the throat. They're not listed in order here. They're listed in some kind of sequential order, but we have to arrange them properly. It should be remembered that the sacral center and the spleen are primarily connected with the planetary emanation of the Earth itself. Well, you know, there's sometimes when DK says, look, the spleen is related to the sun, and the sun's radiation passes through it, but sometimes DK relates the spleen to the planetary emanation. By emanation, does he mean prana, or what does he mean by emanation? And the sacral center is oftentimes left out of the seven. It is sometimes considered a necessary evocation and not one of the true centers. But, you know, if we have the sacral center relating to Taurus, which it does, and the Earth, we can see its earthy nature through the sacral center forms in the dense physical vehicle of the solar logos are produced. And in the dense physical vehicle of the planetary logos. So sacral center is really related to density. That's interesting. When DK gives five centers, he gives the base of the spine, the solar plexus, heart, throat, and head center. This is how he does it. The base of the spine is related to the etheric body, an etheric plane. The solar plexus is related to the astral body, astral plane. The throat center is related to the mental body, mental plane. The heart, interestingly, related to the buddhic plane. So already we're into the triadal area, and the head center, perhaps considered as a whole, is related to the atmic plane. Now, notice the dense physical plane is left out of there. So we are talking about density here, the sacral center, a most somehow material center. And the fact that it's related to Uranus, you know, Uranus is often a ruler, and Uranus is related to Aquarius and to the lowest of the creative hierarchies called the baskets of nourishment. We really get the idea of associating the sacral center with density. And then we understand why the sacral center is not used by the white magician, but is used by the black magician, because the black magician is very much involved with the dense physical plane substance from the previous solar system, and is pretty much a slave or a captive of that kind of substance. The black magician is very interested in material effects and works in a focal manner with those material effects. So maybe something has come out of here about the sacral center's relationship to density and to the vehicles of the dense physical plane. Okay. Now we're also tasks. These are tasks, right? You know, sometimes we start elaborating things and one forgets where one has been. These are tasks, and I think I'm going to just stop this for a moment while I straighten out this tabulation. We are considering now the three crosses. And I've straightened the tabulation out enough so at least we can see something. The cardinal cross, of course, is in a way the divine cross, the fixed cross, the spiritual cross, and the mutable cross, the ordinary cross. Cardinal cross has to do with initiation, fixed cross with discipleship. When we finish with the fixed cross at the third degree, we have consummated the path of discipleship in initiation. The mutable cross, lasting, whose influence lasts for the longest time, it relates to the path of evolution in general until a degree of spiritual aspiration begins. The cardinal cross is the cross on which the planetary logos is found. Humanity is found upon the path of discipleship. The solar logos is also upon the cardinal cross. Let's just say that those upon the cardinal cross are responsive to the planetary logos per se. The issue of discipleship concerns humanity. When we're dealing with the path of evolution, we are dealing with the kingdoms in nature, especially the lower kingdoms of mineral, vegetable, animal. It is with these, and human, that the evolving Son of God, before he turns spiritual, has to deal. So, you know, there are kingdoms of nature above the human kingdom, the planetary lives, number 6, solar lives, number 7, but I don't think it's with these that we're dealing when we talk about kingdoms of nature. Cosmic initiations relate to the cardinal cross, and sometimes it's said that the fifth initiation of man is the first cosmic initiation. Well, it's the first cosmic initiation of the order of man, because it is the first initiation in relation to a cosmic source called Sirius. So in that respect, it is a cosmic initiation. Discipleship, well, it ends when the first solar initiation begins. The first truly solar initiation begins at the third degree. Planetary initiations are of all kinds, but the first two of the great monastic initiations are planetary, the birth of the Christ in the heart and the baptism. They are both considered initiations of the threshold, and they are both planetary. The cardinal cross is the cross of the spirit. The fixed cross, the cross on which the soul is developed by experiencing different experiences in the four fixed signs: the blinding light of Taurus, the fiery pain of Leo, the bitter woe of Scorpio, and the liberation of Aquarius. And spirit, soul, and body is the material personal aspect and is related to the mutable cross. Indeed, the body and the bodies are the main focus during experience on the mutable cross, and not yet the soul. D.K. is giving us a number of these triplicities which are of such importance in his teaching. The life, consciousness, and form triplicity accords naturally with cardinal life, developing consciousness on the fixed cross, and preoccupation with form on the mutable cross. And of course, monad, when you are a true monad or beginning to live the monadic life, you are liberated onto the cardinal cross, probably at the fifth initiation. You're not yet a liberated monad. You have not yet chosen your path, although earlier the path was chosen at the fifth degree, and so the monad definitely has to be active in the life of the master. Although, as I've said, the soul ray as well, or the ray of the triad, is also active because he's an atomic being. The ego on the higher mental plane is related to the development on the fixed cross. And when we talk about the mutable cross, we are building up the personality vehicle by vehicle. Three initiations occur on the cardinal cross, fifth, sixth, seventh, can we say? Two initiations on the fixed cross. What are they? Three and four? Or is he taking these initiations in a somewhat less technical method? We'll say initiation for the cardinal cross, 3, 4, and 5. But not really, because the cardinal cross... the cardinal cross does not include Initiation 3. That is a climaxing initiation on the fixed cross. So in a way, there are three initiations on the fixed cross, the first, second, and third. And then the mutable cross deals with ordinary man who is not initiated. And somehow he has here initiates and disciples, maybe initiates under the cardinal cross and disciples under the fixed cross. All right, that's a quick run-through of that. And I do believe, yes, we are at that point. So what have we done? Well, we've managed to survive the webinar, which means, of course, that go to webinar. Nope, have I spoken too soon? Go to webinar did not cut us off. So what page are we on here? Maybe you'll see a page sooner than I will. I think that's not going to work for me. Let's see if I can find a page here. Yes, we're on page 80. So we are going. This particular webinar has worked esoteric astrology. Well, I'm going to call it 35. And I'll let 34 be the little one. And we've gone from page 77 to page 80 on the 26th of July, 11. And now, together, we will do the great invocation. Just have to find it. And here it is. From the point of light within the mind of God, let light stream forth into the minds of men. Let light descend on earth. From the point of love within the heart of God, let love stream forth into the hearts of men. May Christ return to earth. From the center where the will of God is known, let purpose guide the little wills of men, the purpose which the masters know and serve. From the center which we call the race of men, let the plan of love and light work out, and may it seal the door where evil dwells. Let light and love and power restore the plan on earth. Om. Everybody, for this work, and I'm glad that it went more smoothly and that we were not interrupted, though today seems to be a day in which we could be interrupted. Anyway, we will continue on page 80. This is number 35, and we will continue with 36. Okay.